KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, ever wanted to try making chocolate from scratch, meaning from the beans? The purveyors of San Francisco's Dandelion Chocolate say they've created the ultimate guide to doing this in your own kitchen with just cocoa beans and cane sugar. We'll find out. Then at 10:30, we meet the creators of the podcast The Stoop, which features conversations that Black people tend to have among themselves, like what it means to sound white or to wear African tribal wear when you didn't grow up in Africa. That's all next on Forum. Join us. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, you're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Dandelion Chocolate is a small-batch chocolate factory located in San Francisco's Mission that was started by a couple of friends with a passion for making craft chocolate. Now they're bringing their bean-to-bar ethos to the home cook. Their new cookbook describes the process of sourcing, roasting, and grinding your own cocoa beans and features a few recipes for what to do with the chocolate once you're done. It's called Making Chocolate from Bean to Bar to S'more. And joining me are the couple of friends who had a passion for this. This is Todd Masonis. He is co-founder and CEO of Dandelion Chocolate. Good morning, Todd Masonis.
Thanks for having us.
Also with him is Greg D'Alessander. He's co-owner and vice president of research and development at Dandelion Chocolate.
Great to be here.
Great to have you both. And really, you didn't start out as folks doing chocolate. You were in the tech industry before this, Todd Masonis.
Yes, that's right. Actually, Greg and I both were from the tech world. And so originally, I had a tech company, a Silicon Valley startup that I sold in 2008, and then had a little bit of extra time and could pursue some hobbies. And chocolate was always one of those things I was very inspired about. And then when we discovered that you actually could make chocolate at home with a little bit of DIY and maker ethos, we sort of took to it and just started building our own machines and making chocolate. And then here we are a few years later.
And Greg, you were a project manager for Google?
Yeah, I was a product manager at Google. Before that, I was an electrical engineer. But I always actually wanted to be in chocolate. Even my friends in college will talk about the times that I made liquid nitrogen truffles by putting too much alcohol in truffles. But liquid nitrogen solved those problems for me.
So I can say that I can believe that a couple of people who were in the tech industry, made a decent amount of money, able to take the time to travel and perfect your crafts, could make amazing chocolate at home. But you're saying that anybody can do this. So tell me how, especially if you're recommending that we start at the space of the bean, Todd Masonis.
Yes, so that's exactly right. So you can make a great bar of chocolate at home, and you can do it mostly with the tools you already have. And what we laid out in the book is the process all the way from if you just want to do it with an oven and a hairdryer, or if you want to buy a coffee roaster and build your own machines. And so the process of making chocolate is it has a few different steps, but the first one is you have to get some beans.
And how do you get beans?
So we actually have a couple chapters on it that Greg wrote about actually sourcing beans. But
yes.
I would recommend to get started before you get into fermentation and meeting the farmers. The first thing you should do is buy some fermented and dried beans, and you can buy them from your local chocolate maker. So you can buy them from us at Dandelion Chocolate. There are also a number of great websites. A really good one is called chocolatealchemy.com, and they have unroasted beans that you can purchase in small quantities from all different countries. These are beans with good genetics, with good flavor, that have already been sort of vetted. So they're not like normal commodity bulk cacao, but they're really good beans. So once you get your beans, you have to roast them. And you can use your oven, put them in there for maybe 30 minutes, move them around. If you have a coffee roaster, you can do that. You can use a popcorn popper. You can toast them. However you want to do it, you just have to roast your beans. And it's actually part of the fun is experimenting to figure out how, you know, what your style is. Once you've roasted your beans, you need to remove the shell. If you want to, the simple way to do it is you just roll it in your fingers and take the shell off, and you can get really good at hand peeling it. I think if you're making a very small batch of chocolate, your first one, feel free to hand peel it. Once you start making more chocolate, it's going to get very annoying to have to to peel so many beans by hand. And so what you can do is you can sort of crush your beans with a rolling pin, or break them up, or you know, put them in a bag and drive over them in your car, however you want to do it, and then get a hairdryer and go outside because it's very messy, and blow the shell away. And then if you really want to get into it and sort of do the full-on maker thing, get some PVC pipes and duct tape and a vibrating massager, and you can make your own homemade winnower, so a machine that's essentially an air classifier that blows away the shell. And so we go through this in the book about if you just want to use a hairdryer, if you want to peel them, or you want to get, you know, go a little further. So once you actually have your beans with the shell removed, you have nibs. And so nibs, you see them like on ice cream or banana bread. They're kind of like a chocolate nut. They're basically the roasted and deshelled bean, the little bits of it. And that's 100% chocolate, super pure chocolate with nothing added. And we have some nibs here. And so they're basically, yeah, so they'll taste just like a sort of, yeah, a chocolate nut.
Should I try one?
Feel free, yeah. Okay. See what you think.
Oh, wow. That is really, it's a just a very crunchy and light. You'd think you'd get some kind of a significant bitterness from it, but you actually don't.
Well, yeah, and a lot of that it comes from what bean it is, too. So I'm sure we can talk about this later, but the beans have all different genetics and flavor, and so you'll get different flavors depending on the genetics and how we roast them.
Well, finish describing the process, and then I'll ask Greg about the whole sourcing process as well.
For sure. So once you have your nibs, you could either choose to you know, eat them, or you could bake with them. But if you actually grind them down, the fat will be released, the cocoa butter, and you'll have 100% chocolate, the purest chocolate. And if you grind them down with sugar, you'll actually have chocolate. Like the chocolate we make is 70%. It's just beans and sugar. 70% nibs, 30% sugar, nothing else.
So what do you grind them with?
You can use a juicer, like a Champion juicer. You could use like a Vitamix, like a blender, but you would get more of like a rustic chocolate in that sense. I would recommend, if you want to get into making chocolate, there is one machine you should buy. It's a mini melanger. The one we recommend is the Premier Wonder Grinder. You can buy it on Amazon.com for about $200. It's a machine used traditionally in Indian cooking, and it's these stone rollers with a stone base. And they you basically put the nibs in there with the sugar, and you just grind them. For a small batch, maybe about a day, maybe a little less. In the batches we make in San Francisco, larger ones, maybe 3 to 5 days. But you just let it grind and grind. And yeah, when what's happening is you're going to reduce the particle size to where it's no longer gritty, but you're also changing the flavor of the chocolate. And at that point, you actually have pure, delicious chocolate. You can, if you want to sort of sell your chocolate or present it to people, you'd have to do a process called tempering, which we could probably do a whole other show on just that one step. But otherwise, just put it in molds, put it in your refrigerator, and you'll have delicious chocolate that you can share.
Wow. Well, some listeners are already writing in as you're describing this process. And I should mention that we've posted a video from Dandelion Chocolate showing how to make chocolate from scratch on our website at kqed.org/forum. But a listener asks, in terms of grinders, can you use a coffee grinder?
You can, but it's not going to work as well as you'd think. It's going to be a little coarse, and we've actually had issues where it can mess up the gears. Okay.
One of the challenges of trying to use something like a coffee grinder is cocoa beans have a lot more fat in them than coffee beans do. So a lot of the grinders designed for low-fat materials don't work quite as well when you put a high-fat material. It's sort of like if you put peanuts in a coffee grinder, you can make peanut butter. It's not going to be smooth peanut butter, and you're not going to make coffee in that coffee grinder anymore, but it'll kind of work.
Well, Noel writes, this looks like a very labor-intensive affair. Plus, you need a specialized mixer. You've kind of talked about the various options, though, for mixers. But in terms of a labor-intensive affair, yes, in your book, you say clear your calendar. This is going to be something that you're going to devote a lot of time and energy to. But in some ways, you're almost saying, Greg D'Alessandro, that that's part of it, that that's the beauty of it.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that we really love about chocolate is it's one of these things that the deeper you go into it and you try roasting beans slightly differently, you'll get very different flavors, or how, you know, if you grind it for 3 days versus 4 days, you're going to have a different flavor because of the oxidizing of the volatiles. And so it's true that you can do it really quickly and simply. It's a lot like making bread. You can make bread fast. Doesn't mean you're going to make great bread, but you can definitely make bread quickly. Chocolate's a similar thing. You can put lots of time into it or a little time into it. As you might imagine, Todd and I are both I'm going to use the word geeks to some degree. And so one of the things that's really interesting about chocolate is there's a lot of like high school science involved. You know, it's, you don't have to know, you know, really complex equations to do it, but a little bit of fluid dynamics to understand how a winnower works helps, right? And so the great thing about chocolate is you can really get deeply into it, you know?
Well, let me invite more listeners to join the conversation, and you can do that by calling 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can tweet us at KQED Forum and email us at forum@kqed.org. We're diving into the world of home chocolate making with the founder and owners of Dandelion Chocolate, a bean-to-bar chocolate shop in San Francisco's Mission District. What questions do you have about the process of making chocolate? Or what have you made from scratch like this that you've really enjoyed? Or about the process of doing something from scratch? What is it about it that makes it so satisfying for you? And speaking of scratch, Greg D'Alessandro, you literally travel to countries to look at the beans, right, and determine which beans you want to buy. Talk a little bit about your sourcing process.
Absolutely. So we put a lot of effort into sourcing because all of our chocolate is just cocoa beans and sugar. And that means you have to have really interesting cocoa beans to make a variety of interesting chocolate. And so where that clearly starts is the cocoa farms. I would actually say what I'm mostly doing when I'm going to those farms is not as much looking at the beans, although there are a lot of bean looking and bean tasting happens, but really getting to know the people there that we're working with. The way we look at it is we're building this sort of international business relationship with somebody in another country, and you need to know, you need to figure out if you're going to work well together, if you're going to work well together for decades to come. And so a lot of what I do is spend time with people on their own farms and in their own production facilities to understand what they're doing and what's going on with them. I mean, granted, getting there and getting back can be chaotic and fun and crazy, but a lot of it really is about relationship building while I'm there.
Todd Misonis, Greg was saying that it's always just sugar and cocoa beans, or do you, well, what I mean by that is, what is chocolate that we typically find? What does it usually include?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we should even mention that we are kind of going through a chocolate renaissance right now. A lot of people don't realize it, but it's probably the most exciting time for chocolate in the last 150 years.
Wow.
So chocolate became industrialized when sugar became industrialized, and all of the small companies got bought up, and we were left with just industrial chocolate. So this chocolate's been highly optimized. It's all commodity. It's all about consistency and low cost. And most of the chocolates in the world is made by just a few companies. And that's the kind of way it's been for a long time. And to be a chocolate bar in America, you only need about 15% bean. So when you're eating an industrial chocolate bar, you're really eating a lot of sugar, some additives. You're eating not so great beans that have been burnt. So when you have sort of high-end chocolate or chocolate made by a new maker, it's all about beans and sugar, so it's just the beans and the sugar. And then you may also see added cocoa butter, vanilla, and lecithin. But in our case, we are sort of purists, so we just do these two ingredients.
And in other ways, you know, you mentioned, Greg D'Alessandro, that you're geeks, right? How has your experience in the tech industry shaped the reason that you made a chocolate book that was less about Dandelion chocolate? Because oftentimes when you do a book, you're really building your brand and getting your brand out there. But it is really fundamentally about making chocolate from scratch. So do you think that your tech roots played a role in that decision?
So absolutely. I think in a couple of ways. One, in the tech community, there's a lot of momentum behind open source and kind of this notion that if everyone shares information, we'll all grow more quickly and we'll all know more eventually. And so there's no reason to keep secrets. And we really sort of live that theory, and it feels like it's working for us as well, insofar as, you know, if you put information out there, somebody else is going to pick up the book, think, hey, this looks kind of interesting, start making chocolate, discover something you don't know, and get in touch with you because they might say, hey, I learned how to make chocolate from your book, and I found out this really interesting, neat thing. So for us, part of it was really like the open source nature of things and putting information out there. I think the other thing was, especially when you're doing startups, there's a lot of this sort of questioning assumptions that you do all of the time. And for us, there's so many times in making chocolate, people said, that's not how it works. You can't do that. This isn't how you make chocolate. And we would keep on, you know, sort of pretending we didn't hear that and stumbling on and doing what we were trying to do. And what we found is that a lot of those assumptions, and this is what Todd was talking about in terms of why things are changing in chocolate, when you start to challenge those assumptions, then suddenly you can make very different products that are really interesting and fun that you never would have made if you just listened to the common wisdom.
Well, let's go to some of our callers, Uday in San Ramon. Hi, Uday.
Yeah, hi, my name is Uday, and thank you. This is a very interesting topic. And so what my question is that I make some of the chocolates with different flavors, like cardamom and other things. And if at all you have to make ground up from the beginning with the nuts and all, what is the bonding agent you need to use?
Bonding agent. Todd Misonis.
So there are a couple different ways to add flavors to chocolate. And so one way that a lot of sort of chocolatiers will do is they will sort of, you know, they'll melt their chocolate, they'll add in sort of inclusions, as we call them. Well, they'll temper their chocolate again, add in inclusions, and sort of have larger pieces. If you're actually either making your chocolate directly from the bean, or if you have access to a mini melanger, it's actually really fun to grind your spices and inclusions directly into the chocolate so they're completely ground down. But generally speaking, in terms of bonding agents, I would say that if you're sort of sprinkling them on top, you're probably okay as long as you don't have too much moisture. So moisture is kind of the enemy of chocolate, and you don't want that to get into your chocolate. You don't want your chocolate to bloom. That's sort of when it goes out of temper. So I'd say either make sure that it's sort of dried out and you're grinding it down directly in your mini melanger, or make sure it's dried out and you're sort of sprinkling it on top during the tempering.
Well, Uday, thanks for the question. While we're on the topic, another listener asks, how do you melt chocolate? Todd Misonis, you want to take that or Greg Dawson?
I think the straightforward question, Greg.
There's a number of different ways. As Todd mentioned, one of the things to understand about chocolate is it's a fat system. And so when chocolate's flowing, it's not because of water. It's because of the fat. And so the thing you want to do is melt it in a way that you're not getting moisture into it. That's the key thing. So you can melt it in a microwave. You can melt it in a double boiler. You can melt it, you know, you can melt it over a fire, which we've done plenty of times. Any heat source, the main key thing is don't get moisture in it while you're melting it. And also don't heat it too fast, too quickly, because chocolate can burn like anything else. And then you'll be adding in flavors that you might not want, although you might. I mean, somebody out there might love burned chocolate, and that's their thing.
Well, you might just want to add, though, that if you are melting your chocolate in order to, like, put things into it and you want it to still look good a few days later, you want to make sure it doesn't lose its temper. So you have to melt it very carefully, not to go above a certain temperature. Otherwise, you'll lose too many of the crystals in the cocoa butter. And so then when it reforms, it won't be in the right structure, which means that if you leave it out for a couple days, the fat and sugar will sort of migrate apart from each other. And you'll end up with this sort of white and grittyish chocolate, which you could still melt down and make into hot chocolate, but it might not be what you expect.
Can we geek
Rick
out
Alexander?
For just one second?
Sure.
This is also in the book as well. But cocoa butter, the fat in chocolate, has essentially six stable forms of crystals that each melt at a different temperature. And so the point is, depending on which set of crystals you form, it'll melt at a different temperature. The beautiful thing about chocolate is form five melts at the temperature inside your mouth, which is what makes chocolate this. One of the things that makes chocolate this really amazing thing is that it has this very unique melting capability inside your mouth. And so what Todd was saying is that those form five crystals that you work so hard to make, if you end up melting those down, and then when it cools, if it forms back into form one through four crystals, those aren't room temperature stable. Form six crystals are the infrequently used form of the crystal, but it melts at a higher temperature. So if you ever put chocolate in your mouth and you chew it and it still doesn't melt and it feels like it's just turning to sand in your mouth and eventually melts, that's probably because it's form six, which means it's a higher melting point than inside your mouth.
Well, all this talk about putting chocolate in your mouth makes me want to taste some of the samples that you brought here. And we just, in the 4 or 5 minutes or so that we have left, I'd love to just ask you about how to taste chocolate, because in your book you describe all the different ways that the beans that you source and the process that you use really shapes subtleties or less subtle aspects of the flavor. So when someone's about to bite into a dandelion chocolate bar, what do you recommend that they do?
So we always joke that it's not complicated to taste chocolate, because we don't subscribe to this idea that it's like inaccessible, and in fact it's like you should put it in your mouth, and if you like it, that's a win. But there are a few tips that will make you have a better experience. So the first thing is think about what you've eaten beforehand. If you've just eaten like jalapeno nacho chips, whatever, like you might not be in the best. You might not be ready to see all the notes in the chocolate. Then I would take a quick sniff, just smell it a little bit, see if you notice any aromas. But then put it in your mouth and take one little bite and then let it melt. That's the really most important thing. Some of the flavor notes don't come out for 15, 20 seconds. And so if you just very quickly just swallow it, you're going to miss everything that's interesting. And just to add to that, though, that I think the thing that is interesting about our chocolate and sort of this new American chocolate is that there actually are these very interesting flavor notes. It can actually have more flavor complexity than wine or coffee, and that's coming from the bean itself. And so when you compare one of our bars versus another, you're comparing the actual beans that's different. It's not the recipe or the sugar or anything like that. It's just the bean.
And you have instructions about holding a chocolate, tasting it, making chocolate from bean to bar just more. You can hear that I have a bean that I'm allowing to melt
That's
away.
What we sound like most of the time.
We have Sitanshu on the line from San Jose with, I think, a question on point. Hi, Sitanshu.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So I just want to know, how do you exactly enjoy plain chocolate? Do you pair it with something, or do you just eat it plain directly?
Greg Dalton.
So I eat an enormous amount of chocolate all day, every day. Part of that is tasting what we're doing to make sure that that it tastes the way we want it to. But that's the great thing about the type of chocolate that we make, and a lot of other of the craft chocolate makers in the U.S. and in the world do, is that there's so many varieties to flavor that even just eating a dark chocolate bar will give you a lot of really interesting flavors. That being said, pairing things with chocolate is also great, because there's a lot of aromatics and there's a lot of ways that these things will pair well together. We do cheese and chocolate pairings at Dandelion. We like pairing things so much, we have a set of like events that we do. We do cheese and chocolate pairings. We do tea and chocolate. Tea and chocolate is actually one of my favorites. We do tea and chocolate, whiskey and chocolate, beer and chocolate. There's a lot of these things that work well together. But I personally, after a meal, love a few squares of chocolate. Just plain dark chocolate makes me happy.
Well, a listener tweets, I took a trip to Japan and was surprised to see a dandelion outpost in Kamakura. Why do you decide to open a shop there?
I don't know if they're asking Japan or Kamakura, because they're both interesting questions. We had the opportunity to go to Japan. We found a great partner. But it was sort of a really interesting time for chocolate, as I said before. And it was also starting to explode in Japan, and we had so many visitors who said they wanted to be the dandelion chocolate of Japan. And we said, we want to be the dandelion chocolate of Japan. And so then when our partner came along and we got very excited about what we could do together, we just said, now's the time. And
will you continue to expand?
I hope so, yeah.
Well, Todd Misonis and Greg D'Alessandro, co-founders and CEOs of Dandelion Chocolate, thanks both of you for being here.
Thank you so much.
And the book is Making Chocolate from Bean to Bar to S'more. And you can also make brownies. They have recipes for that from the chocolate that you make. And they've also brought a brownie here that we'll be able to enjoy. But really beautiful book, really beautiful bars. And wonderful to talk with both of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Up next, we have a half hour with the creators of the podcast, The Stoop. So stay with us for that. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.